fire continued as the land surrendered the last of its moisture to the blinding sky. His feet turned raw and his sunburned skin blistered, his mind given over to memorizing the names of the carrion's every tree, animal, and insect, all of them serving one purpose or another. Late one evening, the speeder's powerful forward lamps illuminated a rodent as it leapt from the sawgrass, and with a carefully aimed collision, Jover sent it flying. Wilhuff was instructed to use his vibroblade to excise a scent gland buried where the animal's thin, hairless tail met its plump body. From that gland, the Rhodians prepared a musky gel that they then used in their hunts for more of the same rodents. Similarly, they prepared stimulant concoctions from residue drained from the stomach of long-necked ruminants, or the droppings of felines that had ingested certain plants. Wilhuff grew accustomed to eating every part of an animal, and to drinking blood on its own or mixed with mind-altering plants gathered during treks across the plateau. Over time, he became so inured to the sight, smell, and taste of blood that even his dreams ran red with it. He kept waiting for the adventure to conclude at some log-walled shelter stocked with prepared food and soft beds, but the days grew only more harrowing, and at night, half-starved scavengers would circle and howl at the edge of a meager cook fire, their eyes glowing furiously in the dark, waiting for a chance to rush in and steal back what food they could. The tight-knit band of humans and Rhodians didn't always succeed at remaining at the top of the food chain. Jova's cousin, Zealot, was killed during a nighttime raid by a gang of reptiles whose saliva contained a powerful poison. By mid-season, Wilhuff knew real hunger for the first time and came close to dying of an illness that caused him to shake so violently he thought his bones would break. Sometimes, even the smallest of the plateau's creatures would catch them unprepared and get the better of them. One night, when they had been too exhausted to set up a perimeter of motion detectors, he dreamed that something was feasting on his lower lip, and what his numb fingers found there was a venomous septoid, its pincers anchored in his soft flesh. Waking with a start, he hurried through the open flap of the self-deploying tent, only to land in a stream of the segmented critters, which were all over him in a moment, hungry to find purchase wherever they could. By then, his pained cries had woken the others, who themselves became targets, and shortly all of them were all hopping around in the dark, yanking septoids from themselves or plucking them off one another. When at last they had retreated to safety, it became clear that the assailants comprised only a narrow tributary of the insect river. The principal torrent had gone up and over the tent to where the Rhodians had stored pieces of the beasts the group had slaughtered and dressed earlier in the day, all of it now devoured to the bone. But regardless of whether they had won or lost the day, Wilhuff would be treated to tales of his ancestors' exploits, the lore of the early Tarkans. All of Iriadu was similar to the carrion before humans arrived from the core to tame it, Jover told him. Every day, on their own, as pioneers and settlers, they waged battles with the beasts that ruled the planet. But our ancestors' eventual triumph only altered the balance, not the reality. For all that sentients have achieved with weapons and machines, life remains an ongoing battle for survival, with the strong or the smart at the top of the heap, and the rest kept in check by firepower and laws. Jova explained that the Tarkin family had produced a succession of mentors and guides through the many generations. What made him unique was his decision to make the carrion his home following his initiation in young adulthood. That was how he came to have tutored Wilhuff's father, and why he might even live long enough to tutor Wilhuff's son, should he have one. They spent the remainder of the dry season on the plateau, leaving only when the rains came to that part of Iriadu. Wilhuff was a different person when the speeder carried them down from the mesa and back into civilization. Jova had no need to lecture him on what technology had allowed his ancestors to achieve in the planet's handful of cities, since it was evident everywhere Wilhuff looked. But Jova had something to add. Triumphing over nature means better lives for sentients, But dominance is sustained only by bringing order to chaos and establishing law where none exists. On Iriadu, the goal was always to rid the planet of any creature that hadn't grown to fear us, so that we could rule supreme. Up the well, outside Iriadu's envelope, the goal is the same, but with a different caliber of predators. When you're old enough to be taken there, you're going to find yourself faced with prey who are every bit as quick-thinking, well-armed, and determined to succeed as you are. And unless you've taken the lessons of the Carrion to heart, only the stars themselves will bear witness to your cold, airless death. And they will remain unmoved. Returned to his comfortable bedroom, Wilhuff wrestled with what he had been put through. The experiences on the plateau infiltrating his sleep as vivid dreams and night terrors. But only for a short time. Little by little, the experiences began to shape him and would become the stuff of his true education. Each of the next 5 summers would find him on the Carrion, and each season his education would widen, right up until the day he had to endure his final test at the Spike. But that was a different story altogether.